The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features ensure that you can take on any adventure. What kind of features? Well, how about the available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud? Or the standard third row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together? How about available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone? We're always trying to think about those great spring and summer getaways, but with a car like the Hyundai Santa Fe, anywhere can be your next adventure. To learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe, go to HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
This is unbelievable. Welcome to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. It's your call for the best college football coverage. From National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between, CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Barton Simmons. I'm Chip Patterson. Barton, you are in NFL Draft HQ Central. The big traveling circus that is the NFL Draft is coming to your town. And you are going to be a part of the CBS Sports coverage on CBS Sports HQ, CBS Sports Digital. You're going to be on the set. You're going to be on the scene, holding it down with some of our friends at the which saloon?
Doghouse Saloon.
So if you're in Nashville, go say what up to Will Brinson, John Breach, Danny Cannell, Jamie Eisenberg, and a cavalcade of characters. One of our three sets that we will have for the NFL draft.
Yeah. I am in the eye of the storm right now in Nashville. Traffic is off the charts. I saw somewhere where this is supposed to be. This weekend is supposed to be the most people in Nashville ever. Like, in the history of the city of Nashville, there has never been more people in the city than this weekend. That is what we're being led to believe. So, I think that means it'll be fun. The Uber and Lyft rates may be a little high, but I think it's gonna be fun.
Well, I mean, you've got, first of all, you know, the last weekend in April is annually a prime time bachelorette weekend.
No doubt, bachelorettes may be the ladies that schedule their bachelorette parties.
For NFL draft, unknowingly, yeah, they didn't realize
they might have bitten off a little more than they could chew this weekend. There's going to be a lot of there's going to be a high jersey quotient around Broadway, and I'm not sure the bachelorettes quite knew what they got themselves into for this one, because all the Broadway bars, saloons, typical haunts are like being. They've all been like bought out by banks and corporate sponsors that are like renting them out for clients to come in and hang out. So I don't even know if the typical bachelorette crowd is going to be able to poke in and out of the bars the way they typically do. So I don't know what this is going to be. Kind of wild. I mean, we're all the way. Our main setup for CBS is all the way in sort of almost midtown into Mumbrian Street, not even down on Broadway. So that tells me that that territory is hard to come by.
So they're going Broadway will basically be totally shut down, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All open festivals, probably some stages, street vendors, just blowing it out all the way.
Yeah, all the way, no doubt. Concert series, all of the, yeah, full speed.
Yeah, I cannot... There's a group of girls from Maybe they're from somewhere in South Carolina, right? And they booked this a long time ago. They're not even NFL fans, you know? Like, they root for the Panthers when the Panthers go in a deep playoff run. But, boy, they're going to step into the whole different world there. Jersey world.
Yeah. They're from like Jackson, Mississippi, maybe. Like, they don't even really pay attention to NFL. Like, their husband's just like college football
and fantasy.
Don't even really know the draft's going on. They expect to just, you know, buy some cowboy boots and put up a couple straw hats on and, you know, wear their sashes and have some fun. Little do they know, they're going to have to be hanging out in Smyrna or something this weekend.
And so, of course, you know, watch CBS Sports HQ all the time. CBSSportsHQ.com. You can get it on any of your devices through the CBS Sports app, CBSSportsHQ.com. 24/7 streaming news network. It's all the highlights and all the analysis. No fluff, no takery. CBSSportsHQ.com. So this is our last chance for recording here on Tuesday, April 23rd. To offer some of our reactions. We will continue to be doing this as needed as we continue to move along with CBS Sports coverage of the 2019 NFL Draft. But I want to sort of start at the top. You know, we did this before, just almost like our last check on our good friend Kyler Murray. Basically, we hit a point in the NFL Draft cycle where I at least come from a point where almost anything you hear in the last 2 weeks is probably a lie, or at least carefully placed misinformation or a smokescreen or something to distract you. But 2 weeks ago, there seemed to be a unanimous opinion that Kyler Murray was probably going to go number one overall to Cliff Kingsbury and the Arizona Cardinals. As we sit here 2 days from the draft, not necessarily do you expect it, though I'm curious to hear if you expect it, but has your opinion changed at all on that, on what that outcome might be like, or your expectations for a Cliff and Kyler marriage in the NFL?
I mean, I'm just listening to the guys that are digging in, like our own Pete Prisco, who's sort of leading the charge right now, I guess, that Kyler won't go one.
Right.
And I feel like the general consensus from the draft Knicks is that Kyler will go one, though maybe the confidence is dwindling just a little bit. I mean, my expectation is that he goes one. It wouldn't shock me if he doesn't, I guess. But I still think, especially if, and I'm not as dialed into sort of what, you know, the trade value scale is and what you can get for a Josh Rosen. I mean, it doesn't make a ton of sense to me to use a first round pick on Josh Rosen and then 1 year later, you know, give him up for like a second or third round pick or whatever the going rate is. But I also am I feel like I know what Cliff Kingsbury wants, having watched what he's recruited out of high school, having watched what he's developed in college at the quarterback position. Cliff Kingsbury wants the best football player, stat, like, you know, size be damned, you know, whatever the NFL kind of code words are for like the NFL looking quarterback, that is not going to register with Cliff Kingsbury. And he has been ahead of the curve all along on quarterbacks, whether it's Baker, Mahomes, Manziel, Davis Webb. I mean, he is getting all these guys that others are passing on and turning them into NFL first rounders. And I think there's got to be an incredible temptation for him to do the same thing with Kyler Murray, because Kyler Murray fits. And no. So I still have a hard time seeing him pass, but I don't know the dynamics of that room to know whether it's even his decision.
And I'm right there with you. One place where I fall very short when it comes to NFL draft talk is sort of the economics of the NFL draft. Like, you know, what is the value of a pick? And like, aren't there charts out there that front office execs have that actually have decided what the certain values of picks are when it comes to trading picks? And I do not think that that's going to be a place where I'm going to be able to deliver the clear-eyed view about whether to trade Josh Rosen, what you should wait for Josh Rosen, you know, are you going to get him for 80 cents on the dollar, what have you. But I do know that while coming right back to get another quarterback in the first round, in that view is something that you're like, well, why are you going to do that? You know, you're basically wasting your pick from a year ago. I mean, haven't the Arizona Cardinals already made a decision just by hiring Cliff Kingsbury to enter a new era? Like, right. Isn't this year zero to pick up Cliff?
Yeah, it kind of makes no sense not to just dive in and go full speed at this thing if they're going to hire Cliff Kingsbury. Because I remember, like, I was supposed to be on the mock draft on CBS HQ, and my internet wouldn't cooperate. And so, but I was on the clock, and actually I inherited Brady Quinn's team that he had selected, and he had picked Kyler first. And before I could defend the pick, you know, Brian McFadden and a couple of the others were saying, hey, you know, this is, he's got to run an NFL offense. He's never been under center, and kind of given to just the sort of the general talking points of like the undersized quarterback and the spread quarterback. And it's like, and I was frustrated. I couldn't dive in because first of all, the game has evolved from that. But more importantly, Cliff Kingsbury is not going to be shackled by that even a little bit.
No.
And so if we are going to dive into the deep end of the Cliff Kingsbury era instead of just dip our toe in, let's just dive in and do it with Kyler Murray. So that would be my expectation, but again, it just all depends on what the dynamics of that room are, and those are things I don't know.
I could see college-ass Cliff Kingsbury, and I don't say that as like totally negative, but just definitely to point out the, you know, how ingrained he might have been in that lifestyle. Couldn't you see him? It would be the ultimate college football coach move to draft Kyler Murray and be like, well, actually, we're going to go into training camp with both of them. Look forward to seeing them compete, and right. I'll choose a winner before week one. Right.
And that's, you know what? Like, and that's, I kind of like that.
Me too. Yeah, I mean, like, let's go. Just draft them both, have them both go into camp, and have them compete against each other.
And let's just compete it out.
Yeah. That would be the ultimate college football move, and it would blow. There would be so many. It's a good thing that job is the Arizona Cardinals and not the New York Giants, the New York Jets, or even like the Washington Redskins. Like, I'm just thinking about the afternoon drive radio hosts who now fancy themselves to be like, you know, part-time GMs. What are you doing? That's a waste of an asset right there. Cliff Kingsbury's out there like, I think they're both going to get better.
But what I'm thinking, but like, you can correct me here if I'm misremembering, but have we ever really had, like, when do we ever really have an NFL quarterback competition? Like, yeah, sometimes we'll have a quarterback competition, I guess, when we're talking about, you know, two guys that are battling to be the bridge quarterback for one season until they get the, you know, a draft pick next year or whatever. But I mean, back-to-back number one picks battling for a starting job in the NFL. Think about that drive time radio. Like, we think college spring practice is heavily scrutinized, and quarterback battles are hot topics. I can't imagine if two first-round quarterbacks were legitimately in a quarterback competition. That would be awesome. That would be very entertaining.
And let's take it a step further. Think about the two personalities there with Josh Rosen and Kyler Murray. And like, some of Kyler Murray's personality is like the aura of Kyler Murray and everyone around Kyler Murray, and just sort of like this, you know, his confidence sort of breeds this, you know, you almost just sort of buy into it. And then Josh Rosen, you know, his personality, I would go as far to say, like, you can be turned off to it, but then you see him play and you're like, man, that guy's awesome. And so you sort of jump on board. It's like they absolutely are the different ends of the magnet. And if they were going at it all through training camp, oh man, that'd be awesome.
It's hard for me to envision them being best, you know, boys through it. Like that, I feel like there'd be a little there'd be some antagonistic sort of demeanor to both of them.
While we're playing the hits here, I want to ask you first, do you think that there is starting to be, and again, this is like a judgment of the, you know, things that don't matter, you know, momentum and steam and you know, like, does it feel like people are really hyping up this? It's almost like stock market, you know, right? Like you're just like, oh, are they going up? Where's the value going? Dwayne Haskins, I think that is a player who either his future is decided and everyone seems to know like where he might land, and I don't know where that might be, but I don't hear a lot more as much as we did at the end of the season. I mean, the man threw 50 touchdowns, 4,800 yards passing. Like, he was unbelievably productive, and I just think that because Ohio State fell short of the playoff, which again goes back to getting blasted by Purdue, I think that there was a little bit of overlooking some of that production, and now I've hit the point where looking at Haskins and trying to figure out, you know, not just where he might fall in the draft, but where he stacks up against the rest of this draft class, I find him maybe a little bit more middling than top end than I might have thought, considering, at least in my book, he's the number two quarterback.
I think Dwayne Haskins, I wouldn't say he's polarizing, because I don't think anyone thinks he sucks, but there does seem to be like a faction. Like there's very much Dwayne Haskins factions. There's the people that are like, he's, you know, he's just a guy. He's a good quarterback, strong arm, but he's not that. He's not, you know, that elite kid that would be a top five pick in every draft. It's just a product of the quarterback pool this class. And then there are the guys who are like on the Dwayne Haskins train and are sort of caping up for him, ride or die Dwayne Haskins guys. And I actually am sort of somewhere in the middle, I think. I think he's very definitively a top two quarterback. I think it's him and Kyler Murray. I think, am I excited about him? Like, would I be excited about him with like the number one overall pick? Not sure I'm there. He's got an unbelievable arm. He throws as pretty a ball as there is in this class. I think he's a little bit of a product of the system. I think he completed a lot of passes. I don't know, the ball placement was always right where you wanted it to be. Like, I was at the Penn State game. Yes, he drove down the final 2 minutes and won the game, but those completed passes were all screens, and I saw him miss some balls. And one of the biggest plays of the game was a missed throw that sort of was Ohio State benefited from. And like, so I just think he's not a perfect prospect, but I do, I skew closer to the guys. Like in some ways, I think he is like your safe double, in this class. Maybe not a home run, but I think he's a safe double. He's your starter. He's going to be a starter for a long time. Is he ever going to be lead you to a Super Bowl? I don't think he's going to keep you from a Super Bowl. I don't know if he's going to put you on his shoulders either. It's just he's kind of that guy for me.
Like in a world where I think if you are an offensive coach who wants, I like to call him the joystick quarterbacks, I think he could be a very good joystick quarterback.
Yeah.
Like if you want to be the all in kind of like micromanage, set everything up and have a quarterback that can go out there and just deliver the rock, like that can be Dwayne Haskins. But I'm looking at him and I'm believing that there is development. There's more development left, and you could say that for a lot of these players, right? Like, I mean, that you are still not as much as we do in the NBA, but you're still drafting based on the idea that for some positions, at least, there's going to be a few more years of development before the prime is hit. And it is a small sample size for live competitive action for Dwayne Haskins. And so I think that if you draft Dwayne Haskins, you've got to hope that his delivery, his decision-making, sort of his comfort within whatever the system's going to be at the next level, because those things didn't really get tested in an otherwise wildly productive and record-setting season. So if you think that Dwayne Haskins is what he is, then he's probably an NFL quarterback for a while. I think if you're looking for Dwayne Haskins to be your starter, I think you have to hope that Dwayne Haskins has some more development, or at least, you know, things that he didn't put on tape during his 1 year as the Ohio State starter.
So I've got a few kind of things I got to get off my chest here on some of the potential first couple day prospects.
All right.
I don't know if you got anything as well, but I'm gonna throw a few things at you. Okay.
Okay.
And you can take them where you want to go. One overarching statement I want to make. A lot of these are statements. Okay. One of these statements is, I think there are in this first round, I think there are two guys. And I'm not saying they're going to go in the top five. I'm not saying I'm not saying even that, you know, there's value picks that you get picked before them. But I think there's two guys I'm confident will be Hall of Famers. I think Devin White and Devin Bush will be
Hall
of Famers. I'm not, you know, Nick Bosa may be the appropriate first pick. Quinnen Williams may be the best player in this draft right now. But in terms of just high floor and high ceiling, I think Devin White and Devin Bush are the two guys in this draft I would feel most comfortable saying will be Hall of Famers.
I've just been covering golf and college basketball. It had been a minute until I wrote something for CBS Sports this week. Since I had gone back and just looked at how instinctive and twitchy and awesome Devin Bush is at filling running lanes and just like attacking the ball, chest up tackles, like Devin White, like so good at that, short distance closing speed, just playing all over the field. The two Devins are like, I basically have been throwing out to, I said there are, I want to hear 12 defensive linemen and two Devins taken before the third quarterback is.
Right.
That's the way that I'm looking at this draft. I want to hear 12 defensive linemen and both Devins before I hear a Daniel or a Drew come out of Roger Goodell's mouth, because those two dudes, yes. Like I don't have a good contentious no, you're wrong on that. Those are two of my favorite prospects in this draft class. And I think both of them probably have ways that you could nitpick. I guess Devin Bush, what is it, mostly size? They think he's a little bit undersized. Yeah, forget that.
But I mean, how many, that's the thing though. Like if you think about the great middle linebackers of all time, so many of the Hall of Famers are imperfect from just a trait standpoint. They're just because at that position, it's all about like an alpha mentality, a demeanor, an instinct. And I think that those guys have all that. And then I knew what Devin White was going to run. I knew he was going to test off the charts. But when Devin Bush goes out and pops off a 4.4 whatever and a 40-inch vertical, then it's like, all right, well, what is there to doubt on these guys? Yes, size is imperfect, but I mean, there are Hall of Famers everywhere that were under 6'1", you know, at linebacker. So I just think the leadership, the instincts, those are the things that really separate for those two guys.
Like, doesn't it, remember, I felt like we had conversations about Fournette where we were just like, man, I don't know. Leonard Fournette's just a really good football player. He is just a good football player. Like in this sport that we're playing, we micromanage every play and every aspect of every play and every trait. But like, just playing this sport, Devin White and Devin Bush, they seem to be playing it at a very high level consistently. And if they are given a full bill of health, they can be Hall of Famers right there with you.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let me think. So what?
Do you want me to throw a declarative statement?
You got something?
Yeah. Go yeah. I've got four or five declarative draft statements. I am not. I understand that it's a position of value in general throughout football, but when it comes to stacking up these prospects, I think that there is a gap, as I see it, between Garrett Bradbury from NC State, Jonah Williams from Alabama, and when I was filling out my top 32, I did not have room for Juwan Taylor from Florida, Andre Dillard from Washington State. I think that the need to have offensive linemen in general in football is boosting some offensive line prospects that I, again, as overall prospects, I just don't see as top 32 guys. I think that this is just like at the quarterback position, I think the offensive line is a little bit thin, and that's going to lead to some first round, which, congratulations, go get your money. But I think that that's going to lead to some first round selections and more value picks for players that I see as better overall in the second and third round.
I wonder if Andre Dillard is this year's Colton Miller, or I don't know off the top of my head what the other is, but like it feels like every year there's a guy that runs a 4.9 in the 40, and GMs and scouts convince themselves that he is a great football player when in reality he is a great athlete. Obviously, Andre Dillard is a good football player, and he might be a great football player. I'm not going to pretend like I've watched the Andre Dillard film and broken down how physical he is in the run game. I know he gave up like one sack and 677 pass game snaps or whatever it is. But I think there is every year it feels like an offensive lineman gets overhyped in the first round by seducing everybody with his combine numbers. And Andre Dillard, I feel like, could be that guy this year. And I feel like coming from a program like Washington State, it's so easy to bulk up those pass set those pass set statistics where they're getting the ball out every, so quick every snap, and they have so many pass snaps that of course he's going to have like impressive resume as a pass blocker. Is he physical enough? So I guess to support your point, I've got some questions as well. I mean, the Juwan Taylor dude is sort of a mauler in the run game. And he's been battle tested in the SEC. He's always been this 340 plus pound guy. Like, is he going to be able to be light footed enough over the long haul to do what he needs to do in the NFL? I don't know, but I think it's a fair hesitation or concern in this cycle.
So do you put it, I might be putting some misplaced value in this, but remember a couple years ago the SEC coaches decided that they knew better for all SEC teams, and like they wanted to make sure that they put out their own all SEC team at the end of the season. And some people, either the coaches poll sometimes gets poked at a little bit. They joke about it like it's the SID poll, or maybe, coaches don't have enough time for this. But if you put into the idea that, coaches who are not allowed to vote for their own players really do fill out the players who they value, and they've watched, more tape than most media members just by preparing for games. Taylor didn't show up on either the first or second all SEC coaches team. And in fact, Martez Ivey showed up on the second team. And so if the SEC, like this was not a tiebreaker, but a factor in my consideration, I'm trying to go back to people who study it more, who've watched it more. And if the SEC coaches aren't saying, man, like that guy, that's someone who really is causing problems for us, then I wasn't as inclined to buy in on the idea that the physical aspects that make him so enticing have been backed up by a full college career of being elite.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to believe on any of these. That's why I typically do resort to leaning on our favorite O-line gurus that we've shout out from time to time on this show, because I'm not necessarily convinced even the coaches are really, you know, putting any like actual time and effort into putting those teams together. So I just don't know what to believe, but maybe you're right, but maybe they do. So I just don't know.
All right. So back to you. Declarative statement.
Declarative statement. Jeffrey Simmons will be one of the best 5 to 10 players in this first round over the long haul. And if there is any question about character, I believe it should be a non-question.
Mm.
I think so. Jeffrey Simmons always, and Jeffrey Simmons was always a guy going through the recruiting process that seemed like a 10 out of 10 on a character scale. Those guys, we can get fooled by that. I mean, that's not a reason enough in and of itself to sort of doubt any character issues or red flags. That said, I mean, he clearly comes from a rough background. He had the incident prior to enrolling at Mississippi State, which was an ugly incident. But everyone you talk to at Mississippi State, and I've talked to people about Jeffrey Simmons, like, and they don't say this. This is not just like an across the board statement that they make about every one of their kids. Like there's doubts here and there about others, but with Jeffrey Simmons, there is zero hesitation. There is total enthusiasm about what he is from a character standpoint, what he's been since he's arrived at Mississippi State. So he has the knee. He has the supposed character red flags. The way people recover from ACLs these days is not like – we're not like 1975 here. He's going to be fine from an ACL standpoint. And turn on the film, he's one of the top five players in this class. And from a character standpoint, if you talk to the people that are actually around the program and around him, it is a zero. It is a non-issue. So whoever is willing to trust their sources on that and actually – and trust the doctors on the knee is going to get – incredible value when he falls outside of the top 15 or whatever, because I think he's worth a top five pick.
Even right now,
I think he's worth a top five pick. I mean, not taking into account need. I mean, I probably take Quinnen Williams and Ed Oliver over him. I don't know. I take Quinnen Williams over him. That's probably a safer pick, but I think it's a very real discussion on Ed Oliver or Jeffrey Simmons, but I think those three, to me, are top five guys in this class. And they may be the top three players in this class, in my opinion. And I'd take Jeffrey Simmons right up there as high as you want to go with him.
Wow. Okay. Well, and hey, to my earlier point, the SEC coaches had both Sweat and Simmons on their first team for the defensive line. Problems. They cause problems. All right. I will go... I think that Jeffrey Simmons falls into a category. Like, are you concerned? Are you concerned about like Rashawn Gary reportedly having a labrum issue? Are you down on Rashawn Gary? Like, I think that Jeffrey Simmons with injury falls out of the Quinnen Williams, Ed Oliver. And I guess Nick Bosa maybe categorizes as more of an edge. I slot him below Josh Allen, but then he falls into that big group of other defensive linemen where Jeffrey Simmons probably, even with the injury, ahead of Christian Wilkins for me, but sort of in that second large group of still very much top 15, top 10 in terms of overall prospects, but there's... I don't know. I like you had him all the way through high school. Do you think that the only reason that he's falling is because of the knee? I felt like the idea about I thought character issues or like the 2016 incident. I thought that those were not that anyone had moved past it, but that it had been already settled as part of his overall analysis and profile.
Well, I would think so too, but you still see a big like, and maybe this is just a media narrative. Maybe NFL teams are past it, but whenever Jeffrey Simmons is brought up, there is character red flag. You talk about like, do what guys have red flag? All right, Jeffrey Simmons has an injury flag and is a character red flag. So I don't know who's presenting that, but it is a common narrative that there is a character flag there that you have to get past if you're going to draft Jeffrey Simmons. And my contention is past it. We have passed that up. And he is, if anything, it's a character plus to me, based on it's not a plus that hit that incident happened, but it's a plus that what he's presented over the last 3 years as an adult in college is 10 out of 10. So it's a non-issue. And so, but to me, you talk about a labrum for like Rashawn Gary, like a labrum to me is more concerning than an ACL. An ACL is just, hey, you repair it. You'll be as good as ever when you're through it. You know, labrum is something that could linger year over year. So I just think there's value there with Jeffrey Simmons.
Do you think, all right, so if there's value with Jeffrey Simmons, do you have the same view that Jeffrey Simmons has the potential to separate himself over the long term?
Yeah. I think he's one of the top five players in this class.
Did Fletcher Cox play at Mississippi State or Texas A&M?
Mississippi State.
That's why. I do this awful thing where I see you in a jersey and like that's like, you know how they're like, sometimes it happens where the player comps end up being tied a little too racially, and you can kind of catch analysts sort of like tripping over themselves and just, you know, unintentionally, I assume in many cases. My fallacy is that if there was another player who played your position and was dominant at the school, I think I just see your uniform and helmet. I was like, man, he could be Fletcher Cox, right, Barton?
He could be Fletcher Cox.
Right, yeah, but I'm acknowledging my own, I guess, bias here, that maybe it's just the Mississippi State connection. But, I mean, I think if he's Fletcher Cox, then he's not a Hall of Famer, but he is a top-level, top-tier defensive lineman, and I think that's probably how I have it playing out in my head.
I think you take, yeah, yeah.
And you like take
I said,
that.
There's only two Hall of Famers on this list. There's Devin White and Devin Bush.
That's but
hey, I'll take a multi-year All-Pro.
Yeah, absolutely. More declarative statements about the 2019 NFL Draft right after this.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Okay, my turn. AJ Brown, greater than DK Metcalf, change my mind.
No, I'm not going to change your mind. Yeah. Yeah, of course. Like, who? I want to know. Like, I want to know who are these people and why do they think that DK Metcalf is a better receiver than AJ Brown? All he can do is run faster than him in a straight line.
That's it.
He's a little bit bigger. He can run faster than him in a straight line, and that's it. AJ Brown's a better route runner. He's more productive. He's better at contested footballs. He can run routes. He can change directions. DK Metcalf averaged 3.5 catches per game in a high volume offense. AJ Brown averaged 7+. Like, DeMarcus Lodge averaged 6+. Like, I just don't understand how. I mean, maybe we will be wrong, and DK Metcalf and this was just like NFL guys being smarter than us. And I don't think DK Metcalf is like going to be some bad football player. I mean, he can have a role, but why? Like, it's absolutely is such a contrast and like such it's the compare. Like, not only is DK Metcalf overvalued as a first rounder, but there's a receiver on his team,
right?
That is like, I think very clearly a better football player than him. So I'm with you on that.
So what are the player comps that they're giving DK Metcalf?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Are they trying to say he's like Calvin Johnson or
Terrell Owens?
I mean, yeah, like that's, I'm going to pull up like the NFL draft site and see what they're comping him at there.
I think that, I would say that I go AJ Brown greater than DK Metcalf. I might go Hollywood Brown greater than DK Metcalf.
I mean, I would go N'Keal Harry.
Oh, yeah. Metcalf.
I would go, I mean, I'm just saying, like, I would get, because and I don't want to be too exhaustive on DK, because our NFL Combine recap, you know, we went pretty hard in the paint on DK Metcalf. And again, if you're going to draft him to be your vertical stretch the field receiver, and you're just going to have a receiver for every role in your offense, then that's a good role for him. And he'll be, and I think he could be a good player. But we're talking first rounders. There's a lot of first round wide receiver busts. There's a lot of them. And if you're talking about a guy like this, and this is a guy who is, I mean, he's got some of that to him. I mean, he's a second percentile athlete in the change of direction drills, in the change of direction tests. A second percentile NFL athlete at the change of direction type tests.
Let me get all my
98th percentile athletes in
speed,
in the linear tests. But when you ask him to change direction, he is as bad as they come at the wide receiver position in the NFL.
It's like you think you're getting Calvin Johnson, and this is just a very Georgia Tech joke, but you end up getting Stephen Hill.
Yeah, I mean, the NFL draft, the NFL.com draft site comps him to Josh Gordon. I'm not sure I see that, but
my big swing in the top 32 prospects was N'Keal Harry as my number one wide receiver. I think I got him at like 19 or 20.
All right, so let's talk about Hollywood Brown then, because this is. I mean, so we're talking receivers. Is it that he's going to be Tyreek Hill? Like, is that the? Is that why we're all in love with Hollywood Brown?
No, it's DeSean Jackson.
Okay.
Yeah, that's everyone like he can be DeSean Jackson, and that's the idea that that sort of he's being put into. Put him outside. Put him inside.
Where are you with him? Where are you with him? Like, are you a believer? He's the best one or two players at the receiver position this draft. What, like, where are you with him?
Yeah, I am. I think that there's something about the fact that, to me, that wide receiver room, incredibly talented, and Hollywood ended up with a lot of the balls, right?
Yeah, but is there any level of like Lincoln Riley offensive, you know, offensive creation out of the system that Marquise Brown benefited from? Are you concerned about that at all?
I believe that Kyler Murray and Oklahoma's offense benefited from Marquise Brown. I think that, some of that is when you're the offensive genius and you are given a unique offensive weapon, you put them in positions and you draw up the plays that are going to highlight that. I mean, that's just putting together a winning game plan for Saturdays. And when he hurt his ankle in the Big 12 title game, I mean, Oklahoma won that game, but it was a little bit shaky. And when he was trying to come back and against Alabama in the Orange Bowl, he had a pretty bad game. And it wasn't, you know, Oklahoma made that late charge that made it exciting, but that, you know, I thought that played a big role in Oklahoma's offense, having a little bit of trouble. I mean, Alabama had a really good game plan to throw him off from the start, but I think that the loss of Brown from the Big 12 title game and, you know, his poor performance in the Orange Bowl, like, only sort of reaffirmed to me that he is not, he was not a, his success was not a product of the system. His success benefited the system and helped everything with that Oklahoma offense.
Yeah, I'm trying to be evolved in my thinking, but I'm having a hard time with a 160-pound receiver. I late in the year, and I know that a lot of it was due to his injury, but the last couple games of the OU season, I'm envisioning a lot of contested balls that like he couldn't bring in. And I get when he's out in space, he's tough to deal with. And I guess DeSean Jackson makes sense. I'm not sure. Like, if the Titans drafted him in round one, I'm not sure how confident I'd be.
It can take some time for some of those players to settle in. You know who started to play pretty well as a number two, number three option after a rough start that included some injury issues? Was Curtis Samuel from Ohio State. They got, I mean, he's diminutive in frame, and they got him doing some slotty, scat, stretch the field kind of stuff with the Panthers. And he was lost, out of place, couldn't see the field, got a little bit hurt. But after a year or two of adjustment, he really started to, you know, the coaches talked about him a lot more. He really started to find his, and he was really a running back for the most part at Ohio State. But he's starting to settle in as a regular rotation wide receiver. And I think that if we're talking about in this particular draft class, if we're talking about Hollywood Brown being among the top, you know, two, three, four, definitely not number one or two, definitely not number one, and maybe not number two receiver, you're talking about a player that you're not expecting that wide receiver to come in and immediately be a one or a two. And I think that because of the change in like change of direction, the top end speed, I think that is worth it when you go down to just adding a spark and big play potential to your wide receiver room.
All right, where are we at on Noah Fant? Because here's my Noah Fant question. I looked this up. If Noah Fant gets drafted in the first round, he will be the least prolific pass-catching tight end to get drafted in the first round since 2004, Benjamin Watson. So, the counter-argument to myself is that George Kittle, in the same Iowa offense just a couple years ago, while he wasn't a first-rounder, he had a less prolific pass catching career at Iowa than even Noah Fant. So I'm very conflicted on Noah Fant. I would certainly feel better about TJ Hockenson. I think I'd feel better about Irv Smith. But if we're going to go Noah Fant in round one, I want to know, do we believe A, that he is the exception? And B, is it time for us to start browbeating Iowa a little bit for not getting more production out of these freak show tight ends?
Especially when they've got NFL-ready Nathan Stanley under center.
Supposedly.
Supposedly. Allegedly. Yeah, no, I'm in on Hockenson. And my edge for Hockenson is like being able to get down on the line and also be a pretty good run blocker. I think that that brings some versatility. I think that Noah Fant is exciting to NFL GMs for, you know, 6'4", 250 pounds. He lines up in the slot. He can move around in the offense. He can get down on the end. Like, there is a lot of – I mean, isn't that – I didn't write this because I wasn't confident in it enough, but I will discuss it on the podcast because I can get some instant reaction here. But is this now like the post-Gronk era where everyone wants to get themselves like an imitation Gronk or figure out a way to have that tight end that can sort of do it all and move around and cause matchup problems? Rob Gronkowski has been very, very good for a long time, but it has been now, and especially with his retirement, sort of brought about in my mind the idea that that is a trend that everybody is looking for. And George Kittle's success with the 49ers became proof positive that you don't, like, you can just go and find these guys if they've got skill sets A, B, C, and D, physical traits A, B, C, and D, and then they're just going to all of a sudden become a matchup nightmare.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess everyone's looking for Gronk, but I mean, none of these guys are Gronk.
No, not Gronk in particular size, but I was thinking that Gronk in terms of like your role in the offense.
Right. Well, and that speaks to, like, I'm not sure Noah Fant is necessarily a, you know, guy that's going to really impact the run game as a blocker. Now, that's why TJ Hockenson, I think, is the guy at tight end, because he can be that,
right,
as a blocker.
I agree.
So I do think, I mean, just in looking at who gets drafted at tight end.
Oh, I got Jay Sternberger. I might take Sternberger over Noah Fant, because that's 17 yards per catch and 10 touchdowns. Yeah.
I'm with that. And Pro Football Focus has been putting out some damning numbers on Fant too. Like, he's had 3 broken tackles in his entire career. I think it had something like, yeah, dropped like 13 catchable passes on 91 targets or something like that. Like, so I just think, you know, his athleticism is tempting, but there's reason to think that perhaps it's misleading. But again, I mean, George Kittle had like 200 yards receiving his senior year at Iowa. So it's, there is just sort of an element of like, I mean, they're not, what would Noah Fant be? I mean, there is somebody said for Iowa preparing him for an NFL style game, but what would Noah Fant have produced at Oklahoma? I don't know. Maybe he would have been a 1,000-yard receiver instead of a 400-yard receiver. I don't know.
Let's see. Oh. This is more of a discussion than declarative statement. I feel there is not a consensus on Greedy Williams, DeAndre Baker, and their physical talents, and a season in 2018 where mostly like they don't have a lot of stats in terms of like passes defended, pass breakups. A lot of quarterbacks chose not to throw at him. And then you've got like this other bucket where you're a little bit undersized, where maybe the speed isn't great, but you've got Byron Murphy and Taylor Rapp coming out of the Jimmy Lake show at Washington. Do you favor one or the other, or how much do you think that there's a big difference between these, you know, top end SEC corners and the defensive backs coming out of Washington?
I think I'd take Byron Murphy over those other guys personally. Ball skills, big time check. I mean, you know, Greedy and DeAndre have those two. I think probably Byron Murphy is a little bit less of a just lockdown, put him on an island guy. So maybe he's a little more scheme dependent, but I trust him a little more, I think, as a player. And I know he, you know, he's a, I think he's a guy that is dependable off the field as well. You know, so, and I guess there's some like DeAndre Baker buzz about like, you know, wasn't a great influence during the bowl prep or whatever when he was sitting out the bowl game against Texas. So I don't know. There's a little bit of buzz about that, but whatever. I just there's a trust factor with me of Byron Murphy that I kind of like. And those Washington DBs, correct me if I'm wrong, but they're all panning out right now, aren't they?
Yeah. Like what was it, Sidney Jones?
Yeah, and Kevin King. And the little safety.
Buda Baker?
Buda Baker. Oh. Yeah.
And Byron Murphy came in this, but Byron Murphy was at least like, oh yeah, of course you know this. Byron Murphy was a good signee. Like that was a good sign for Washington. He was a well-regarded prospect. Taylor Rapp was mostly unknown and then developed during his time.
Yeah. And I guess, and Taylor Rapp, I mean, I think there's other really good safety options. So I get if Taylor Rapp doesn't go first round or early second, but I think he might be the best safety in this class too, I think. I mean, I think he's really, really good. He ran a 4.8, and so it's going to be hard for teams to get over that.
Says Jonathan Abram, another one of those top safety options.
Ooh, man, Jonathan Abram is a nasty, nasty dude. So I mean, he's up there. I mean, who are Deontay Thompson is another name from Alabama. There's I'm blanking, but I just feel like I've seen a bunch of pretty solid names on the safety board that I'd be comfortable drafting.
All right, I'm close to out on declarative statements. Anything else on your notebook?
Yeah, those are my most convicted statements. I'll save some material for the live draft show in case I get called on by the teacher. But yeah, it should be fun.
Jerry Tillery, I'm rooting for, but the expectations aren't as high as what I'm rooting for.
Jerry Tillery was a different dude in recruiting. He's one of these guys who's going to get like knocked with the, how much do you love football, because he has other interests. He's a unique specimen, size and athleticism.
I liked that he kind of changed. Didn't you tell me he kind of changed his body a little bit throughout his career? Worked on it.
We evaluated him as an offensive tackle. We ranked him as an offensive tackle.
Wow.
He came to Notre Dame, played defensive line. I think he's another guy. I think he's a safe play at the next level. Just a big, athletic, tough kid.
Love it. He is Barton Simmons. You can follow him on Twitter at Barton Simmons. You can see him as part of the NFL draft coverage on CBS Sports HQ. Follow it on CBSSportsHQ.com, the CBS Sports app on all of your devices. You can follow me on Twitter at Chip_Patterson. Barton, thank you very much.
Yes, sir.